Hi, I'm Josh, and I would like it if you did not call it a comeback.
I have no intention of calling Josh's comeback such, and I'm Matt.
Just say your name. Just say somebody's say name.
I don't love you.
But I do love...
Pacific Rim was good.
Horror show hot dog. All right, so I'm back on the scene after a week in which I proved my lack of worth by not being here and nobody really noticed. Right, you guys had to work three times as hard, though, to fill a show.
I don't know. Looking back on that, was that a great idea or the greatest idea?
What, doing all 11 or having Josh gone?
Yes.
Which idea?
One of them is the great idea. The other one is the greatest idea.
Well, you couldn't have done it with me because I would have been like, I have familial responsibilities and I need sleep. Yeah. And I can only watch three movies in a week.
It was the worst planned idea we had done.
It was awesome. I'm glad that you guys did it yourself to yourselves. I would have felt really guilty if I was just like, hey, you guys should watch all the Friday the 13th movies, wank wank.
Yeah.
I just started just chain watching them.
Me too. I watched like three or four a night until like four in the morning while I was working on stuff for Convergence, and it's just like, this is awful.
Thing which, how did Convergence go for you?
Really good. We raised some money. We met some cool folks. It was nice.
You meet any of our HSHD people?
A few people. I don't think it was anyone that we didn't kind of already know. I don't think met any completely random people, but I did have people stop up and say hey and ask what we were working on next. So that was always really rad. So I think next year we should maybe try to have a stronger presence there. We could maybe even do a show there. So
a stronger presence.
Oh yeah, I think if we billboard that we're actually somewhere you could find us, then we could probably hang out and meet some cool nerds.
It was sad, man. This year was the first year where like you and I were tight enough, and like I started hanging out with Tim Wick a little bit, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, I finally understand what Convergence is and how one attends it, mm-hmm. which is not information you can get from, like, say, Convergence's website.
It was sold to me over the course of, like, 8 years.
Yeah, so
because there was like, that's this big convention to hotel. And I'm like,
a slow burn, really.
And, well, really, they're like, I'm like, well, what do you do there? And like, oh, man, there's, like, these parties, and your friends are all there, and you're drinking. I'm like, so it's like if I throw a party, but with people I don't know at it? And they're like, no, but, I mean, I was like, so far you've described nothing I can't do at home.
Well, and also, there's like, a panel for Kingdom of Loathing. Like, cool, can I sit in on it? Well, no. Oh. Well, you like, you can sit in the audience if you buy a ticket. How do I buy a ticket? We're not going to tell you. But this was the year that I finally figured it all out. And like, sweet,
that was like
I'm
your first
this.
Year in Minnesota.
And
that
was like,
that happened, yeah.
Oh, fuck. I'm on a road trip that entire time. So next year, we want to hit it up.
Yeah, I think
the wife
be
and
fun.
I. Since Dragon Con is not going to happen again until we pay for it ourselves, which is not going to happen.
That's probably
ever.
Not going to be a thing. Yeah,
yeah, so Convergence is going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm going to cosplay.
So wanna, there you go. That's your
I want to play some cos.
51-week teaser.
Yeah. Has anybody ever cosplayed Bill Cosby?
I saw the greatest Lewis Tully cosplay this last weekend, where he's got the big colander on his head from when Egon is working on him, and he even has like all the mannerisms and stuff right. So I have this awesome picture of me and like Lewis Tully. Oh, and some chick with like the baddest ass Freddy Krueger costume. So I'll throw that one on the show notes for this episode. It was pretty tight. So, oh yeah, movies. Remember, we do a movie podcast.
Yeah, but I thought we were still in our hey.
We're in the hey phase. It's not like
what's up,
we're
dudes?
Gonna. Deconstruct these three movies. We're just gonna be like, hey, remember that one part Evil Dead?
Yeah, that, I feel like this will be
and that's all it's gonna be, right?
Yeah, I figured this would be a show that was much more about like what we think of the movie as opposed to going point by point, because honestly, if you listen to a horror movie podcast, you've seen these movies.
Yeah,
like I don't think we're gonna be breaking new ground for anyone. So
it was interesting for me seeing them in light of the remake that we loved.
Yeah.
And just seeing it, like, what different genres are at play in them?
Mm-hmm.
Because Evil Dead 1 or La Muerte Mala.
Yeah.
Uno. Although there's no the, is there? Or is there in the original?
The original is The Evil Dead. The remake is just Evil Dead.
Yeah, because we're, you know, we're in a fast-paced Twitter, Facebook world.
Yeah, we need to save them characters.
Well,
man.
Also, technically, they're going to continue both series, so it's not really a reboot as its own.
Yeah,
reimagining.
Which is pretty exciting. Here's the Lewis Tully.
That was pretty good.
It's pretty fucking badass.
That is eerie.
Yeah, and that's just all he did is walk around looking awkward. And I walk up, I'm like, can I get a picture?
Being,
he goes, I'm the key master. I'm like, yes!
Vince Clortho, that's who he's being at that point in time.
Yeah.
Oh, key so master good. Of Gozer.
Oh, Gozer.
Yes, have some.
What I love at conventions like that is seeing people who came separately in compatible costumes getting together and doing shit.
Yep, saw a few of those. I did have a photo with one of the other vilifiers with in a group cosplaying as the entire cast of Archer, which was awesome.
That's great.
It was so great. Yeah, it was fun.
How did the nerds handle like your fucking gasoline that you?
We were pretty wildly popular with our vodka Kool-Aid with Everclear cherries. We bought enough stuff to make 2,500 servings, and we ran out about 1:30 in the morning on the last night. We wanted to go till 2, so it was pretty much perfect.
Excellent.
And it was nice. We wandering around the halls and hear people like, "Oh, dude, did you get that drink with the Everclear cherry in it?" And I was like, "Hey, like that's my party." So
do they not hassle you at all in the hotel?
No, the hotel...
Giving out drinks?
No, the only rule on that is that you can't have, like, an obvious booze container. So as long as you're carrying a mug or a glass or something like that, but not, like, a can of beer or a bottle of whiskey or something.
He's like, our buddy Data Vortex at Dragon Con every year was doing a KOL party where he would just hand out free booze, and that was part of the draw.
Mm-hmm.
But last year when we went, he had moved to one of the ballrooms and ahead of time had said, I'm going to hand out booze. We got people at the door checking IDs, and that's going to be cool. And they said, yes, that'll be totally cool. So after we got all the booze set up, then they came in and said, well, actually, you're going to need to hire a bartender from the hotel,
staff. Yeah.
And you're going to have tickets. And like handing out unregulated booze is something that you tend to get hassled over.
Yeah, I've seen that happen in other hotels. I think that... the hotel Convergence is in realizes that it probably adds an extra quarter to their annual budget to have this convention there because it was about 8,000 nerds.
Maybe that's the thing. Is that so at Dragon Con there are 6 different hotels and
yeah, and this one there,
can't
I mean
swing
yeah, the
big a dick in them.
Yeah, the main all the action happens in basically one hotel, but the 6 or 7 surrounding hotels are all booked for con. So I think they've just decided like we make a ton of money for these 3 days, so they just kind of let it go. You're required to card, obviously, for giving away booze. But at this point, if you do a party room, it's expected, pretty much. You don't have to, but you're going to have trouble getting attendance without that. So,
we should do a party room with Jaeger bombs.
Oh god,
that salsa serves.
Well, you know, we won't be dipping into the stash,
right? But, well, like before that is going to happen, he's going to have a Jaeger bomb by the end of the year,
and then he'll be converted. And
that's true.
Like, this is actually delicious.
Yeah, these are some of the better drinks. Tricky. Okay.
Salsa.
Completely thought of just like 70s era, like when you made the line that it's not required, but it's expected.
Yeah.
Like, well, I took you out to dinner, so giving me a BJ is not required, but it's kind of expected.
I mean, I drove all the way out here.
I drove and I paid for everything.
Yeah, like.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that you're basically a prostitute, but
if you were, it would really help me out a lot.
Oh, this went over way better in my brain.
Yeah, like, it sounded so logical.
Oh, man. So, when was the first time you guys saw Evil Dead? Let's do this.
I was introduced to the series by watching Siskel and Ebert, and they were talking about Evil Dead 2. And Ebert was just gushing all over it for, like, the POV camera work for the unseen force. And there's a part in Evil Dead 2 where, like, it's doing the whole, like, through the wood. And I forget, like, Ash hides somewhere or something. And it's doing that whole, like, and all of a sudden it kind of stops and kind of, like, looks around and then backs off because it gets, like, kind of lost and confused. And Ebert was like, that's freaking hilarious that your unstoppable force gets confused and gives up. And I was like, okay, so, like, this sounds like a kind of cool movie. And this is before I'd watched horror movies, period. Like, this is, like, the first horror movie I went out to go seek out. So I went down to, like, the video update that weekend and was like, okay, that's Evil Dead 2. I should probably see the first one. So rented Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, which were the only two that were out at that time. And that's how I got introduced to them, which is why the pencil to the Achilles scene is still one of like the strongest touch points of in horror movie history for me, because that's one of the first really graphic, unsettling horror things I ever saw. So I was probably like middle school age, something like that, when I saw them. So pretty young, and it was just like, these are weird and baffling. And the first one is still pretty scary because I think I hadn't just seen anything that was all that terrifying before. And then when we got to the second one, I'm like, no, he's right. This one's pretty funny. And dug him after that. I'm one of those assholes that's bought like every release on DVD. because they keep coming out with the new, this is the new whatever.
With a new rubber fucking Necronomicon box.
Yep, got that upstairs. Yeah. So, I'm that guy. I did Platinum Dunes or whatever else has gotten many, many dollars for me for just going, this one's got an extra 2 seconds of footage.
Right.
If that's the important 2 seconds.
Man, I could burn you a copy of the Laserdisc transfer if you would like, which is actually the definitive version of the original film. It's got the best color correction of all of them.
Well,
the Laserdisc transfer.
That is.
Thank you, my spleen.
Laserdisc does transfer at a higher bit rate.
Good old Laserdisc. Laser Records.
I was like a year ago, we went up to somebody's cabin and they were the people whose parents had money in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a Laserdisc player and a crate of Laserdiscs. And we tried. But, like, you watch half an hour of Total Recall, like, this looks pretty amazing, except that it has to be on this old-ass TV, because that's the only inputs that it has.
Sure.
And then 30 minutes in, it's like, please flip over the disc.
Yeah.
And another 30 minutes, please put the next disc in.
Because
then
you look, and there's, like
four Laserdiscs.
Yeah, at least, like, two or three discs. Yeah. That would get a little tedious.
Good time.
Well, Laserdisc for a long time was the only way to get the original ending of Clerks, where Dante gets shot.
Right.
That wasn't available on
the wrong
VHS
ending
releases.
Of Clerks.
So. Certainly, yeah. And it's the, I got that definitive version of Army of Darkness, which plays the original version as well, where Ash just sleeps one century too long and it's post-apocalyptic, which is sort of funny, but nowhere near as cool as the S-Mart ending.
Right.
And the version I've got doesn't have the S-Mart ending. So I'm like, oh, I got the less funny ending now. Damn it. I'm like, what the fuck? Meh. That's what happens when you have six versions of a movie that only needed one.
I saw Army of Darkness first, I'm thinking, in college, when everyone around me was already like huge Bruce Campbell fans. And I saw Army of Darkness and then read the first of it, like If Chins Could Kill, I think.
Yeah.
And then did like extra work for Bubba Ho-Tep and was like huge Bruce Campbell fan, and then finally went and saw Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. But I didn't remember much about them except for Army of Darkness.
Yeah,
so this was interesting to see again.
When I was really big in like buying actual individual issues of comic books was right when Army of Darkness was starting to come out. So most of the comic books I have from like that age, there's at least one Army of Darkness ad in it. So now when I go back to read comics that I bought like as a teenager, it's like, ha, yeah. Low on gas, surrounded by evil. Cool. What about you, Adam?
First time I saw Evil Dead, I was 14. Because I remember I bought my first VCR. At, like, one of the very first purchases I made after having a job when I was 14.
Makes sense. I get a stereo.
A VCR and then a DVD player. I bought them both in the same weekend.
Wow.
Because DVD players were brand new.
And crazy expensive.
Yeah, it was like $400.
Yeah.
And I just like spent all the money I made for like 2 months.
Yeah,
you know, when you're 14, you can only work X amount of hours.
And you're making, like, $4.25
an
hour.
Yeah, you're, like, fucking just indentured servant, basically. And, yeah, I bought the VCR, and I bought the DVD player, and then I went, and, because I wanted to start watching horror movies, because I'd always been so scared of them when I was younger. So I was like, I'm going to start just powering through all these and become super knowledgeable about them. And, like, in the cheap VHS section was Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness, all three of them for like $8.
Oh, nice.
And I bought them all. And then I watched Evil Dead, and then I watched Evil Dead 2, and I was incredibly confused because this is before the internet.
Yeah.
And just like, why the fuck is the first movie in the second movie but different?
Yeah.
And then I watched Army of Darkness, and then I watched Army of Darkness again, and then I watched Army of Darkness again.
Right. I feel like that's the pretty natural progression for folks.
So that's kind of how it worked out for me. I was just like, just watching that over and over again. First DVD purchase, though, Blade.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
I bought Blade, and here's how lax the actual, like, checking for how old people are. I bought Blade, American History X, and Friday all the same day. Just like, that, and that, please.
Well, you're the
dude,
guy.
Isn't this the one where the dude, like, kicks that guy's curb head in over
the
a
dude.
Curb?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought this was a history movie. Well, it does say history in it. It must be about Malcolm X. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that seems logical.
It's the team-up between Malcolm X and Professor X as they travel through time, rewriting American history.
Oh, there you go. That sounds...
Tell me you wouldn't watch American History X-Men.
Probably actually watch that. That sounds awful.
Because you curb stomp Wolverine, and then his face just puts himself back together. And...
just the endless Fantastic. Feedback loop of Wolverine curb stomps.
Starring Fairuza Balk as Mystique.
Don't even get a shot.
And Dunn's like, you could look like anybody. Why are you looking like Fairuza Balk?
Yeah, just... It's that same moment. It's the moment of X-Men 2. It's Nightcrawler and her. And she's like, you could look like anyone. Why would you look like that? I'm like, fuck yeah, Nightcrawler. Way to tell her.
I can love it. So I have a decidedly different angle on these movies, right? Because I've only seen each of them. I've seen Army of Darkness maybe twice. And this is my second time through Evil Dead.
Yeah, I've like worn out VHS copies of these movies.
Never owned them.
Yeah.
I was always Mr. Broke-Ass Von Brokington. Which is continuing
the Connecticut broken.
Yes, absolutely. Which has continued until whatever time it is now. No matter how much money I have, I just run out of it.
That's generally how that goes.
So I wasn't buying a lot of movies.
I've had punctuated equilibrium of wealth in my life. Right. Where every now and then I'll have like a good year, and I buy a crap ton of shit, and then it's like, oh, that was fun while it lasted. Now I got 4 years of misery.
Me too.
I remember when I was a kid thinking, God, if I could make $100 a day, that is an unfathomable amount of money.
Yeah,
and when I got there, when I was like 23, like somehow I'm still eating ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And like I got my VCR,
to be fair, ramen is delicious.
Yeah, and DVD player when I moved out by signing up for 2 years of MSN internet dial up, and they gave me $100 gift card to Radio Shack. So wow. I went and bought a DVD player and VCR.
And your first move wasn't to go get Army of Darkness. That's strange.
Yeah, it's weird. I got a Netflix subscription and watched everything. Because I had no friends.
But now you have
no friends, ladies and gentlemen.
Now you have an even better streaming service, though.
Right. Dunflix.
Right.
Last night, I was watching Evil Dead on Dunflix on my laptop, and the wife was watching True Blood on Dunflix on the TV.
Dude.
We're like, holy shit, we're pulling multiple streams out of Dunflix.
The true versatility of Dunflix is unbelievable, because I was watching episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force at the bar on my phone.
That is a shit ton of bandwidth to be delivering, and all of it was in good quality, too.
Also, how shitty was the bar you were at that you were choosing to watch Aqua Teen?
Oh, dude, I was waiting for someone to do a meeting about a music video.
Oh, okay, that
so
makes
just like,
sense.
So they're just like, Aqua Teen.
Yeah, we gotta get you a Dunflix subscription.
It sounds like a tight. Thing, yeah.
He's always updating his library.
Dunflix is gonna be updating with G.I. Joe Retaliation soon.
Okay, well,
that'll
happen.
We're very excited
new
about
releases.
It. Bulk new releases. It's very varied in large amounts. Dunflix is not a real thing, people.
But so if you ever want to watch 10 Things I Hate About You and a couple of seasons of Muppet Babies and some like bizarre horror movie from Finland,
that sounds like everything I watch.
Yeah, Dunflix is your
it's right in my wheelhouse.
Service. Dunflix, call today 1-800-DUNFLIX.
And there's people like, I'm not getting a real. I want to use this. I don't get it. I don't get why I can't use this. So, the opening of Evil Dead with like the reverse fogginess across everything is just like truly ancient classic film magic.
I love watching the forest inhale. Yeah,
yeah.
It's like.
Yeah, that's the thing, like going back and watching it again, is that Josh and I talked about this just really briefly before we started recording, is that we've watched plenty of movies that were like a director's first movie or made with no money or by a relatively amateurish crew. And, you know, Evil Dead definitely shows the seams on what they're doing, but the stuff that's happening is still just interesting and different than something that in these other movies we watch that are someone's first movie or with a low budget. Like, they're more ambitious, I think. And that's why you can go, okay, like, I can see why someone looked at Sam Raimi after doing that and was like, there's potential for that guy to do something pretty cool. And, you know, that's why my favorite scene in Spider-Man 2 is the Doc Ock getting revived and the arms and the sound and the movement of the camera and all that is straight up Evil Dead. And it's just like there's a very intense Raimi style, and I think even in the first movie you see where that's starting to take shape, which I think is what makes even the first one, for all of its faults and all the nasty sweat dripping out of the monster costumes and stuff, like, it's still just like, I respect this. This is pretty cool.
He makes good use of some like really old techniques, though, like the Dutch angles, never having it quite on kilter to keep you kind of
which ramps
balance.
way up in two, which I love. But yeah, or even just the invention of, like, what do they call it, the Ramo Cam?
Yeah,
and is it the Samo Cam, the Ramo Cam? And I feel like there was one other one that they kind of, I wouldn't say invented, because it was basically just strapping a camera to a 2x4 and shoving it through a window.
Right,
but like finding ways to get a shot that they wanted without having the budget to fake it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when people get possessed and they kind of have that awesome, like, hanging, lurchy, weird thing where it's like they don't look like they're floating. They don't look ghostly and ethereal. They look like a person hanging from something. But that honestly maybe works a little better. And if you do happen to glance over their shoulder, you can see just the black velvet curtains that are hanging past the window, so you can't see the dude, like, working the lever to try to balance the actress from outside. But it's effective in its weird, like, lo-fi way, which I think is always just interesting.
Well, also, I think Raimi's, like, use of B-roll in horror movies, like cutting to the feet when they're floating and things like that, like, his use of that masks how little money they had. Because it's just like, all right, we're going to shoot these small things that, as a reaction shot, don't make any sense. Because she's floating, we don't need to see her feet off the ground to know that she's floating, and you don't have the money to show her full body.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know what, let's just cut to her feet then, and we'll get the shot. So yeah, and then they pull down those shots, and basically just does a lot with B-roll. And it's pretty... Horror is a genre that does a lot of A-shots in general, you know, of monster reaction.
We want
reaction
big splash
shot.
Reveals.
Yeah, it's like we want person scared, we want monster, we want person, we want monster. You know, very rarely do you see it's like person, just objects in room as a shadow passes over, and then monster, and like... You know, so Sam Raimi has always done a really good job with that, whether, you know, his later films are... Even Spider-Man 3 has good B-roll in it.
I only saw
even
that
though,
one once.
Even though Spider-Man 3 is, well. Itself is not that great.
Yeah.
I thought the little cuts to, like, somebody's mouth and the, like, somebody's eyes and then
yeah,
Bruce Campbell's
the
eyes
super
looking
super close
back
up on someone's eyes being like, you know. Or even when Bruce is flirting with his girlfriend and he's kind of pretending to be asleep when she comes to get the necklace or whatever... The way that that just cuts between the two of them is, what, 16 shots instead of just the two it could have been? But it tells the narrative better, you know, where it's, you can tell, like, okay, he's doing that, there's the game. Like, you have even the horror movie type shot of him having his eyes open and then her suddenly reacting and his eyes are closed, which is the same thing you do in a sinister shot, but he's doing it as a playful, romantic thing, which just fits the genre, but also kind of turns the romantic part kind of on its ear.
There's the acting is pretty nothing amateur but off, right? Like,
yeah, what's
it's
the...
not the people doing line readings that are awkward so much as the, like, hammy kind of over the top.
Yeah, they're not doing, like, it doesn't look like they learned their shit phonetically or anything.
Right.
Like, they seem to kind of know what they're doing, but yeah, there's a weird, it's almost like stage acting on film. It's a little too big, a little too exaggerated, and maybe that's just, you know, younger actors not being as good at playing subtlety. Because who's the dude, the blonde dude? What's his name?
I don't know. The one who kind of looks like Harrison Ford.
Really?
There are some shots where, especially when he's shot from below, he looks exactly like Han Solo.
Huh.
Weird.
I'll have to watch it again. No, but whatever, like, the dude that's, well, the one that's not Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
That
Scotty.
Dude, is it Scotty? Yeah, you're right. I wanted to say Barry or something like that. It had to have that kind of a weird... But that dude, I think, was a little more disappointing than the others. Although, like you said, I don't know that anyone is really, like,
with the exception of the, I'm not waving at you! That's the only part that he really excels at.
Yeah, I don't know, like, it's... The cast they have is kind of meh. But I almost wonder if they didn't cast them because they figured they would look pretty cool in the Deadite makeup, because they all look pretty badass once they're possessed. And so maybe it was like, well, you're fine for these purposes, but later in the movie you're going to look awesome with these contacts in.
And I think all of them are genuinely creepy in their Deadite makeup, like, especially the girl
Linda.
In the nightgown who just kind of sits on the floor
and Linda.
Giggles for way too long. And I don't mean, like, that's a bad part in the movie, but, like, it does... get under your skin, because it just goes and goes, and, like, yeah, like, when the character starts screaming, like, shut up, like, that's what I was doing watching, like, oh my god, make her stop, like, this is fucked, like, yeah, she's extremely creepy.
They're, like, and the other woman, when she starts calling what the cards are that they're holding up,
very cool,
and then spins around, does the floaty thing, that she's really good with the herky jerky limbs and not nothing is quite right.
Which again is like it's done in a really broad and exaggerated way, but it works. Like, because you could look at that and go, oh, like there's no, like they're just they're having like a little seizure, but it's like, nah, it's pretty cool. Like, I don't know, it just, it, a lot of this movie just is things that I feel like should not work, and they should be one of those movies like Haunting of Whaley House or whatever, that like it just, this shouldn't work, but something about the way this one comes together does for me.
The physical acting is good.
Very good, yeah.
It's
and that only improves
that are...
in like the next one too, which is, we have all the, like the backwards acting that they had to do to get some of the shots that they did, which was always just kind of a fascinating thing for me. There
I
is, if you're a really crazy fan of these movies, if you haven't already, there's like a compendium about the three movies that gives you like a million and a half details that I used to have. I think it's just called The Book of the Dead. I don't think it's called Necronomicon, but it's basically just like a, I don't know, 250-page book that is just every possible behind-the-scenes photo and story and anecdote. So it's like you can tell exactly which shots are the usual actor or actress playing the Deadite, and then which ones are Ted Raimi because the actor or actress quit.
Yeah.
And so they had to put him in the suit. You can tell when they expose a tube, when they're doing like a part here, and like it just, it gives you every single thing, and has all like Rob Tappert and Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell all telling you what they all did and when they were fake shemping and all that, and it's pretty fascinating. So yeah, there's a way to get a ton of trivia about this in a really kind of easily digestible book form. It, you know, for you kids, books are when information was stored on paper made of trees before everything just came to your ear hole from the internet.
Or whatever hole.
Or, well, should
and
I?
Your, you and your eyeballs.
Your eye hole.
Your eye holes. Man, shut your eye holes. You know what I like about this movie? About one of the things that I like about this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Is it is just a machine to chew through people and do crazy gore effects and stuff.
Pretty much.
There is no point at which they sit down and go, okay, so how do we stop the evil? Oh, we need to do this and this and this to stop the evil. Here's our plan. Let's throw it together and let's do it.
Yeah.
There's, like, none of that. There's not really any, like, let's sit around and talk for a couple of minutes either.
Yeah, and there's no rallying point.
It kicks into gear and, like, 5 minutes and then just goes until it's done.
The closest they ever get to trying to do anything worthwhile is just going, okay, we're gonna wait till morning, then we're gonna get in the car, we'll take the bridge. Oh, and then like the next thing happens and you're like, that's as close as you guys got to having a plan to get out of here. It's like, oh, we'll take that thing that we can't do, fuck, and that's as close as they get. Like, there is never a, you know, well, we gotta stay together, or let's all hide in the bedroom and we'll board it up, or we'll look for weapons. Like, there's just none of that. It's just not. We're just fucked from start to finish. Like, yeah. Do you find, and this is something that I think that I've had when I've talked about this movie with other people, do you guys see this as just like a straightforward horror movie, or do you see this as like an exceptionally dark or nihilistic movie? Because it was definitely considered that when it came out by a lot of people, that it was just too grueling and just too, that, you know, there's just no hope throughout the entire movie, really, for your entire cast. And at the end of the first movie, you honestly just assume everybody's dead until you get the sequel. But I never really... I don't see it that way.
Well, I mean, I guess I could see for the time period it came out as being nihilistic.
This is what, 82?
Because most horror movies have the one survivor who beats everyone, and the end is just like... And they walked away, and maybe the killer...
The sun comes up
and
you
know, maybe the killer comes back.
Forget about me.
Fist up.
Yep.
And but not... But this is like, all right, Ash did it. He killed all of his friends. JK, still gonna get ya.
Yeah.
So,
it's too silly for me to view it that way. Like, there are movies where the characters are the point of it, and you're caring about them deeply, and then shit happens to them, and you feel bad.
Like,
and then there are movies that just want to chew through people.
Yeah.
Which, like, at some point, that makes it like they're not people. They are the cogs in this machine that he's building of this kind of. What did they call it? The, like, horror slapstick?
Splatstick.
Yes, the splatstick genre that he's doing. And I think it would be really hard to watch that and come out disturbed.
And I guess I would think so, too. But, I mean, this is a movie that had trouble getting released in, I believe, Great Britain, and I think maybe Australia, even?
Germany.
For a while? Germany? Yeah, Germany is an odd one that just doesn't go for a lot of the really violent stuff. But the... Yeah, I just the other thing too, though, like you mentioned, is it is a little too silly, and yet this one tonally is never attempting to be silly,
right?
You know, like this one is played straight from the hip the whole time, but there is sort of a maybe it's just that there's like a joy in the filmmaking of it, and that bleeds through and makes you think that like okay, they were clearly having fun doing this despite the fact that it's not a wacky movie.
That's it. I think that's it. It's the energy.
Which is also...
Well, there's also something about Bruce Campbell. Just in just looking at him in general, I kind of want to laugh at him.
And it's like hard to take seriously.
And that's not like a... Not like a dig on him. There's just something about him that just is jovial and just is. You just look at him, he's like, all the time. All the time he's got that fucking weird almost duck face going on.
Bruce Campbell invented duck face. You heard it here first. Got
a horror show hot dog exclusive.
Young Bruce Campbell looks so much like my sister's first husband that it's actually kind of off-putting to watch these movies again. It's like, oh, that guy was such a tool bag.
Do you guys have this mechanism in your brain that when you hear a friend tell a story, you cut off like immediately where you think it'd be funniest?
Okay, where'd you cut that?
I cut that right at Bruce Campbell looks just like my sister.
Perfect.
And that happens to me all the time. I'm like, I'm still listening, but I'm like, laughing at this like alternate version of the story in my brain.
Well, I think if the last almost year has taught us anything, it's that Adam writes whole different movies in his head.
And I write entire different realities in my head. Why stop at movies? It's just things you say. It's like, remember that one time you said Bruce Campbell looks like your sister? No, I said looks like my sister's first husband. Nah, I hear that.
Yeah. From Adam's point of view, he is Reed Richards' crazy kid. Constantly reshaping reality.
Yeah, I'm the Franklin Richards in my own mind.
There is something about, though, like, he looks like this kind of chisel-jawed hero, and I think a lot of the funny shit in 1 and 2 is how ineffective he is. How he's constantly just kind of wailing and screaming and moaning and getting beat up.
He only gets more cowardly as the movies progress. In the first one, he's not a coward, he's just ineffectual. Probably the greatest scene illustrating that is when that bookshelf falls on him.
Yeah.
And it is clearly like whatever happened before IKEA that was cheaper. And it's like two planks of wood. And he has to kind of sit there and act like he's trying to heave this bookshelf off of him when clearly his slightest movement is nearly rocking the entire thing right off.
Is that
off
the first
him.
Bookshelf or the second? Because there are two.
Oh,
there's like one on either side of the room and
you're
he hits
right.
both of them
I think
some
it's
way.
The first one.
But this
know.
Is what I mean, though. Like, it's hard
but
to
he
get
does get beat to shit.
Caught up in the like metaphysical ramifications of the subtext of the plot when a lot of it is just how much can we wreck this cabin, and how many fluids can we pour on Bruce Campbell?
Yeah. And I think that's what they kind of wisely recognized for the sequel was, you know, we did all this stuff to make it crazy and over the top, and people cheered and laughed at it, so let's show them what they thought they were getting in the first movie, but actually give it to them. And that's where you get, like, the horizontal geysers of stuff in the second movie and whatever.
How does the tree rape scene play in this year of our Lord 2013? Engulfed as we are in the morass of rape culture. Sorry for saying morass.
I don't know. I feel like that still comes off as a pretty shocking scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, for what they were setting out to do, which is, like, really surprise their audiences and pull them along in somewhere they didn't expect to go, like, I think it's really effective. I think that's a better scene than something from, like, a Hostel or a Saw movie that's also just really shocking and gory. I guess maybe that has a little bit of emotional weight to it that all those other things kind of lack. So, I don't know. I feel like it still works. It holds up for me, which is a weird... The rape scene works for me.
I think it's still really viscerally strong.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, like, shot from the feet as it, like, winds up and, like, slowly... She's like fighting against. It's like, oh, this is
that. It gives you a good chance to have some dread.
Something right. really bad. Like the first time I saw the movie, it was just like something really bad is happening.
Yeah, and it does. That's one of the spots in the movie where quite literally the seams show because it's all shot in reverse with the vines, and you can see where the clothing is pre-ripped. So you can kind of tell where everything's going to happen before it happens. But the first time you watch it, at least I didn't see that at all. I was
impressed at how everything was moving.
It's pretty, for being all practical, like, that's, and for being, what, a crew of four dudes, including the actors, like, it's pretty good.
It is, like, it's probably the darkest moment in a movie that involves a whole lot of dismemberment and people getting turned into demons and fucked up royally.
Yeah.
Because it has a darkness and a sinister thing to it that you can't really undercut.
I mean, I
read that Raimi has said that he doesn't think it fits the rest of the movie, and he's probably right. But it's you know, indelible.
No, I can see that. Like, yeah, you could have that movie, I think, be just as enjoyable without it. But that is probably the darkest moment in that movie, which also gives you the most weight to the threat.
Yeah.
So that raises the stakes for everybody else from then on. So in that regard, I mean, you might not need that scene, but you might need something to accomplish that same thing. I think what you were getting at, that, or at least what you made me think of while you were talking about Bruce Campbell, too, though, is I think that based on him being kind of the too rugged and kind of charming but doofusy guy, you never worry about him being in peril. It's when the other people are being attacked that things get a little tense.
Right.
Like, I worry something horrible is going to happen to his sister or to Scotty or whatever. But, like, with Bruce, you're like, well, he's going to get beat up. But he just looks like the guy that's going to – he can handle it. Yeah. You know, so I think maybe that's part of the thing, too, with his appeal. Is just like, this looks like the guy that can withstand whatever's thrown at him. And horrible things might happen and do. But he doesn't seem as vulnerable as the other – I want to call them campers, I guess. The other kids.
Cabin attendees.
Yes. Yeah. The other kids in cabin.
The cabinet.
The Evil Dead cabinet.
The vacationers.
So this, like – I like this a lot more than I like Evil Dead 2. Even though Evil Dead 2 brings us into Army of Darkness, which is great. But this is the only one of them that is a horror movie, I feel like.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because he didn't have the budget to do all the, like, Ray Harryhausen stuff that he wanted to do with the stop motion and getting those fantasy elements in. But I love the way that it just kind of hands off willy-nilly from guy in suit to obviously paper mache puppet head to stop motion decomposition thing to reverse shot, and you can see what they all are, and they look very different from each other, but somehow it kind of hangs together. I think the energy kind of makes it work. Like, it's, let's see, I wrote somewhat funny, gleefully gross, the birth of a Raimi. I like how weird it is. It's there's no reason for shit to happen the way it does, and it's all kind of catch-as-catch-can.
And he did, you know, to his credit, invent his own monster.
Yeah.
Like, the Deadites are really, they're not exactly zombies, they're not exactly demons. You know, they're not necessarily even out to kill you. They're just fun to be dicks sometimes.
Just really enjoying,
which, you know, it gives him more freedom, too, to how they interact with your victim. Because sometimes they are just going to be, like, the big shambling monster that's going to try to run up and gut you. Other times they're going to be your own hand running around, or just someone sitting in the room with you just laughing. Like, you know, it gives it a lot of variety so that he could kind of write, I think, just different scenes he wanted to shoot.
Yeah.
And then make them all just kind of string together by having the Deadites be that flexible.
So this is still, like, I enjoyed the shit out of watching this. It's a 7.5 out of 10 of vine rapes for me.
Yeah,
I was trying to think of something else, and I couldn't think of anything else to say.
Send us a vine of your vine rape.
Please don't do that.
Please don't do that. That would be awful.
Use the Instagram service so we can get
we can get some filters on there, too.
I feel like these are all going to be a little tough to rate without having, like, a thick lens of nostalgia applied.
How thick?
Pretty thick, like Barbara Walters thick.
Well, I do like me a thick Barbara Walters. I don't even know what that means.
Hell yeah.
But I know that I mean it.
I fear what it means. Because I'm inclined to go like an 8 or even a 9 because I really love this movie, but I worry that if I were to watch this exact movie, if you could just like wipe my brain and I'd seen all the other horror movies I've seen and then just watch this, I don't know if I'd love it as much as I do, if that makes sense. But I'm just going to say, I'm going to go like an 8 out of 10. What the hell is in that blender? It's just way too red right at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's a classic. It's awesome. I'm probably going to fall in that same 7.5 out of 10 giggling Lindas.
Yeah. Just,
I love this movie, but even now watching it, there have been so many amazing horror movies since it, and even in the last, 5-6 years that I've seen, that some of my just love for it as a movie is kind of diminished, and the nostalgia kind of takes over. But at the same time, it's also...
And you've seen it a million times, too, like I have, which also dulls the impact.
So, you know, I'm getting diminishing returns on it at this point, but I still think it's really amazing, and if you haven't seen it, you probably should watch it.
Yeah, certainly an important film.
Yes.
You know.
By the way, Matt and I are going to start a Flogging Molly cover band and call it the Giggling Lindas, so keep an eye out for that.
Why did you draw me into that nonsense?
Flogging Molly cover band. Not that there's anything wrong with Flogging Molly, it's just I'm fucking not doing a cover band. for them, of all people.
All right, let's take a break.
One Direction cover band. That's
that's where the money's at.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
Second or a two-way street.
Okay, we're going to take One Direction songs, and we're going to rewrite them to have a bunch of Harry Potter references in them, and we're going to call it Wand Erection, and that will be our cover band. We'll be back in a minute.
I don't know why.
I just want to do the Ric Flair thing.
Yeah.
Okay. We're recording, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to get that woo on tape.
Well, who doesn't want to get a woo on tape?
True.
Josh, can you woo like Ric Flair?
Thanks for pitching some woo.
Can you woo like Ric Flair?
I'm not into dudes.
Can you do it though? Woo? Can you go woo?
I'll give it a shot.
Woo!
It's good.
It's good enough for someone who's never seen The Nature Boy.
Yeah.
If you're listening on headphones, if you're listening on headphones.
Well, I'll run it through Levelator. That probably won't blow out people's ears, but it might. So if it did something.
If we're lucky.
Right.
Please send your letters of complaint. Or actually, if you've lost your hearing because of our show, please record yourself saying something because it'll be really funny. I was really pissed off what you guys did on your show.
And they're using Wi-Fi at McDonald's, so people are like, what the fuck?
Look at that crazy guy over there. Woo!
Speaking of crazy, Evil Dead 2 certainly ramps that shit up.
La Muerte Mala 2.
Which is why, subtitle, Dead by Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why this one's my favorite of the three. I like the smaller cast and the high level of insanity, but it doesn't get as slapsticky as Army of Darkness does.
Right.
So, yeah, this is the one that... I think you mentioned it already, Adam. This is the one that confuses
larger
the
cast.
Fuck out of you. Did I say larger? I meant smaller cast.
No, you said smaller, but it's a larger cast.
No, I mean compared to Army of Darkness, which is like the other one that...
Oh, I thought you meant like in comparison to Evil Dead.
Oh, no, larger than Evil Dead, but yeah, I was compared to the next, like the other two that are usually people's favorites. Not a lot of people like the first one best. I'm sorry.
All right. I just need clarification. I was like...
No, I'm sure our listeners did too.
There are two more people in Evil Dead 2 than there are...
Matt doesn't know how math works.
Oh, God, my secret is out. No, I'm sorry. Mentally, I was comparing the Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, which are kind of the ones people watch. No one really watches Evil Dead a lot. But yeah, so this one is kind of the sweet spot of the series for me.
I was really confused, because I haven't seen it since the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And that opening, just like, wait, is this for real? It's like the opening of Beetlejuice or like Nightmare Before Christmas, and then like all the stop motion stuff going on and the narration over the top and everything, and it's like this is really just kind of Harryhausen-y.
I love that.
Yeah, like, you can tell that once he got
the
his
book
budget,
getting scribbled in and like I love that shit.
Like what he really wanted to do was make a Hammer horror movie, I feel like.
Yeah. I think
there's
with
like the
a different pacing
at the beginning,
but yeah.
Like, everything feels a lot like the three that we watched for what eventually ended up being Peter Cushing Week.
Yeah. I really want to watch some more Hammer horror. I actually really enjoyed the style of that. I need to watch more of that stuff. But yeah, then, of course, watching this as a kid, when, like I said, I got the first two movies were like probably the first two horror movies I ever went out and actually like got to watch. And then watching this and going, why would this guy go back to the same cabin? And didn't he die at the end of the last one? And he had another girl to go with him? Because it's not the girl from the first one?
And it's Linda again.
And I was so fucking baffled. And it took me until, like, the fourth time I watched it, where I was like, oh, this is just because there was, like, what, 6 years in between movies, and they assumed most people hadn't seen the first one?
Right.
So it's the point at the end of that where he gets hit in the face and it starts flying through the woods is that's actually where movie two starts. Everything before that is just an abbreviated version of movie one. Now I get it. Okay, now I can enjoy this better. Because at first I was like, this movie makes no fucking sense. And all my friends thought it sucked because they're like, it's the same fucking movie. And I was like, but it's not because all this other cool shit happens. And like,
I think if you chop out that like abbreviated retelling of the first one and just smack it right up against the ass end.
Smack it up against the ass end.
I've been known to.
Of the first movie.
I offered to do that for friends in high school when I was...
You offered to smack it up against their ass?
I took TV in high school, and so like had video toaster and all that, and I was like, I'm just going to bring in my two tapes, and I would just cut them together and put them on an EP VHS. So I did. It was the final shot of Evil Dead married with him getting hit and flying out the door. I'm like, there. Now the fucking movie makes sense. Do you understand why I like it now? Here you go.
Oh my God. You were like some kind of bootlegging genius in high school.
Yeah, you were the guy cutting the CGI out of the Star Wars.
Yeah, back in 1997,
Do you want to know what my bootlegging was when I was a freshman in high school? My family had a cheater box. and I would take the extra long plays, and I would record pornography and sell the VHS tapes at school.
That's nice.
Yeah, I had two VCRs, and so I ordered a copy of the Cactus Jack King of the Deathmatch tournament off eBay for like $5, and just sat and recorded them all night, every night, and just sold them on eBay for $10 a shot. And I was like, this is an unlimited source of funds. This is genius.
This is incredible.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked. And then, of course, 2 years later, the internet was big enough that no one wanted tapes anymore, so it was like, oh, shit, all right, fuck. But for a little while there, that was a really great, profitable way to make money by just bootlegging shit.
It's actually kind of cool to take, to do an entire movie in 10 minutes and compress it down to the core elements. Like, here he goes, beheads her, he buries her, and blah, blah, blah.
Comes back, gets chainsaw.
The only thing is, Bruce Campbell, at that stage in his, like, professional development, being a normal guy is out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
When he is just supposed to be the kind of goofy, romantic guy before the shit goes south, it just it doesn't play at all. You're like, he is a sociopath. He is like Christian Bale in American Psycho.
And that is the character arc of Ash. Hmm. From movie one to Army of Darkness, he just gets more and more narcissistic, more and more of a sociopath, and more psychotic.
Well, and this, once the shit goes down...
Also more cowardly.
But also more of a badass, though, too. Like, his fighting skills go through the roof.
Well, his fighting skills go through the roof, but he does everything in his power to never have to use them because he's such a fucking coward.
See, that's all Army of Darkness, though.
It is, but that's what I'm saying. The overall arc, yeah.
Again, they're pretty smart at just having the shit go down and have him start reacting. And he just has to react for.
They did learn, I think, very smartly that if you just watch him get fucked with. It's this. Oh, man, that. Fucking just weird mental connection. Like, it is very much what I do when I try to be physically funny, and I just realized I think it's probably because I'm trying to do what Bruce Campbell does when something horrible and physical comedy is happening. The crazy exaggerated movements, like, you know, getting tased the other week and just flopping around and having the expressions for it and, like, the weird asides and all that. It's like, I'm realizing now it's very Bruce Campbell. And I think they found that in him, and that was, of course, his strength for this movie and the next, and it only gets ramped up further in Army of Darkness, where... He's a guy you want to see in an unbelievable, unwinnable situation because he will not look pained or terrified exactly. He will look confused, a little hurt, and put out. And that is a perfect recipe for horror comedy. And that, again, that's, I think, why this one's my favorite, is watching him react to himself for 30 minutes of this movie when it's basically just him acting off of himself. Fucking gorgeous.
And I do love his, like, George Lucasian, no, when the bridge is out.
Yep.
Just so over the top.
And you can see the...
kind of scrapes genius.
You see the Three Stooges influence even more in this movie than he did in the first one, which is what Sam and Rob and Bruce used to do as kids, is they would shoot Three Stooges films. They just, by watching the Three Stooges film, going out and shooting the exact same thing with them and their friends. And that gets ramped up a lot in this movie. In the first movie, that's why you get a couple of things that are a little silly. But here you have, like, the light bulb filling with blood, which is from a Three Stooges short called, I believe, A Plumbing We Will Go, where they are brought in to be plumbers. They're terrible at it, and everything in the apartment starts filling with water, including the light bulb. And Sam's like, well, we're going to do that same thing, but with blood. And so you have all these influences that go back to their comedic roots that they really lean on, and yet somehow they made the tone of the movie make that not jarring.
Uh-huh.
Because the tone is totally different in part two than it is in Evil Dead. And yet, you just kind of go along for the ride. Like, I don't remember being like, well, this one's sillier.
Well,
I was like, this is fucking,
like,
awesome and hilarious.
It's gleefully grotesque.
Yeah.
It has that Brain Dead Alive vibe to it. I never know what to call that movie anymore because I keep getting called out for changing the title.
I just call it Dead Alive.
I call it Dead Alive. Sorry. That's what it's been called in every video store I ever saw here. Like, it's sorry.
I believe the actual title was The Hazing.
Yeah. Originally.
Unless you bought it in Germany when it was Boo.
Yeah, there was Boo.
Brain Dead Scared Alive.
Scaredy brain. I like it. Green light that picture.
It's Brain Dead Scared Alive because it's about a baby who is born all fucked up with giant claws. And then
Rosemary's Basket of Brain Dead Alive.
Now at Arby's.
Do you get potato triangles with that?
You get loaded potato wedges. They're loaded with souls. My favorite shot in Evil Dead 2 is the mirror shot.
The mirror shot.
My favorite shot in the whole movie.
That is lovely.
Gorgeous.
The just him holding on to the edges of it.
And quite, you know, literally holding on to the edges and figuratively holding on to his sanity.
Yeah. And then him popping out of the mirror practically and grabbing himself and going, "We're not fine.
Yeah.
We just cut our girlfriend apart with a chainsaw. We're not fine." Just like... And then it kicks off the fucking shit parade.
Oh my god! The entire room laughing at him when the chair breaks, and then him finally just losing it and laughing and doing that weird little
squat,
cartoon character, and then like stopping, and then they all and they go through it again, and you're like,
and then they're all laughing, and then the knocking, like,
and then yeah, instantly shoots what's her face? I can't remember the names of any of these characters.
Shoots right at.
Bobby Sue, Bobby Lou, Bobby Joe.
He shoots
Joe.
Right.
Bobby Joe. Oh, God. By the way, that fucking hillbilly is one of the best hillbillies ever captured on film.
How do you guys feel about the incredibly great eye getting smacked out, swallowed moment?
I love it. That is one of the things that proves he will do a POV for
anything. He's like, let's just do the point of view of the eye flying through the air.
Oh, it's so good.
We'll like, take it from the POV of the mouth.
Yeah, it was... I love that. It is so gleefully redonkulous that it just, yeah.
See, I started giggling when the whole cabin comes to life and starts laughing and everything's like moving back and forth. In my brain, I'm going, I got my mind set on you. And I just imagined that chair was rocking because George Harrison had just got out of it. It's like, wow, Bruce Campbell, you're going to have a shit time in here. We rigged this whole thing up for my music video.
You know, speaking of like the whole room coming alive and laughing at him, the initial like of the deer head turning to look at him and then laughing is creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it is.
Like it's got the milky eyes and it's got the wrong laugh. It's just a wrong pitch and tone and speed. And it's just like, that's fucked up. And if it had just been that and then something horrible happened, it would just be a really scary moment. But then they add in all the other shit and it becomes hilarious.
You got demonic version of Lumo. Of Lux from the Pixar opening.
Yeah, pretty
laughing
much.
Laughing at him.
For some reason, okay, I did an Adam move where I stopped your joke. Because you said, like,
nice.
Duman, I'm like, Dumanji?
Where I like
it's
it.
Deadites in Jumanji?
Sounds...
Don't play that game. It's Dumanji.
Oh, yeah. In the spike pit, you must wait till you roll a 6 or 8 type scenario?
But there's like, you know,
David Alan Grier's car gets like lifted up by flying
but
deadites.
But Henrietta's in there, and you're just like, oh shit, roll faster.
Deadite Bruce kind of climbs out of the board and goes, what year is it?
So cool. Of course, one of the main set pieces in this movie is Ash cutting his own hand off, which gives us, of course, the I don't want to say the perfect joke. But maybe one of the best jokes in cinematic history where he has to put the hand under the wastebasket and then set some books on it to give it some weight. And, of course, it is a copy of A Farewell to Arms.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, it would be really funny if it was. And then it gets set down and you go, attaboy, Sam. Attaboy.
And he bought all the books at the secondhand store.
You know, it's just, it's one of those things where, like, that should ruin the movie, but it's just, it's cute and adorable. And you want that to exist in this universe.
That scene is so great when he's... The hand is wrecking the entire kitchen and just breaking things over his head. He's fearless in that shit. Like you definitely start to see why people obsess about him.
Yeah,
that's
a
genius physical performance.
It is, and it's just manages to be incredibly charming. You know, without having him mug for the camera, really, it's just putting it all out there. And I think that's something you can kind of respect and identify with.
So right before that was the moment that it finally gelled for me. Because for a while it was like, okay, then, like the camera work is similar. You can tell he's more looking for this like old school vibe. But, and then the Linda coming out of the grave, headless Linda doing her little dance and getting the head put on. And like all that shit was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when like, okay, I'm on board. And then he starts kicking his own ass and it's awesome.
Is that the Harryhausen style stop motion thing with her?
Yep.
That part...
And she just kind of does the disappear behind the tree.
Yeah. I respect that as how hard it is, but for me, it's all I can think of is fucking Bumble's bounce and fucking Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, absolutely.
And fucking, like, old Saint Nick and fucking Jack Frost, like, jumping away and fucking fading off into the distance. Like, all I could think of was Christmas time.
Yeah.
But then her coming back with the chainsaw and getting the chainsaw tipped back into the neck.
Well, that part's great. It's just that
the head in the vise.
Sam just smacking him with that stupid doll. Because basically, again, from like reading the book and stuff, anytime something's hitting the main actor in the face or hitting them hard or pouring gunk on them, Sam does it himself. Because he thinks that's super funny.
Yeah.
So it's like when you watch the first Spider-Man movie, when Tobey Maguire is walking out to the wrestling ring, and he's just getting pelted in the face with shit. It's Sam on the camera dolly just hucking shit at his face as hard as he can because he wants to do it. Like, you don't have the extras do it. Sam does it. And so when it's his buddy Bruce, it's way, way worse. So you know he's just like, God, quit hitting me with this fucking chainsaw doll. But nah, it's great. The chainsaw headless zombie thing almost shouldn't work because it is super stiff.
Oh.
And it's like a broomstick with a mannequin on it. I mean, it is that simple. But again, it's like that part of the charm of the series is that that's just kind of funnier.
And you got all the blood squirting out of it in the head and the vice.
And I think that's the thing, is by really ratcheting up the gore to just ridiculous levels, you don't care much about some of the more practical parts because it's just fun to watch what's going to happen. It's more interesting to go, okay, like, you know, the hand runs into the wall and you get the little jokes about hitting the mouse trap or whatever and flipping them off and all that. And when it's running across the room, you can tell they've got the one board up, so you've got the forced perspective, so the guy can kind of do the thing, and, like, you forgive all that. And then, you know, you get that really awesome, again, with those scenes of Sam showing weird shit when Bruce is trying to locate the hand behind the wall, and you get that thing to his ear, and you hear that little squeak, and his ear just twitches a little bit. And, like, totally unnecessary, but a great moment. And he finally shoots it, and that little bit of blood trickles out, and he's like, And then you've got 2 seconds before a geyser of blood rockets him against the opposite wall of the cabin. And then every other bullet hole does it. And then it changes from, like, red to green to black. And then you get the reverse shot of all of it getting sucked back off of him into the wall. And Ash is left going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you're doing watching it. And so he becomes a great little cipher for some of the most WTF moments in the movies. Because they don't have to make sense. And I don't think Sam ever tries to explain it. It would just be really cool if blood geysers shot horizontally out of this wall right now, wouldn't it? Like, well, yeah. Let's do that.
Yes, indeed.
Two is also the movie where the amount of cuts and makeup and gore on Bruce never matches up from scene to scene.
Yeah.
Because like most movies, they didn't shoot it exactly in order, so they had to kind of guess how beaten up he'd be. And so they had like the little diagrams, and you can see them in the book, where it's like, okay, so we'll have the cut on the chin, this, the that, and he'll be about this wet. But then they might go way over the top in a scene or way underplay it, so he'll have the varying degrees of clean shirt or varying degrees of severity of being beaten up that changes from every 2 minutes. But again, you just kind of go, ah, whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So,
I really like the scene when he goes down into the cellar to finally, like, fucking start it up. Because this is where, as cowardly as he is, he becomes... This series is, like, the perfect arc of ineffectual pussy. Because in the first movie, Scotty is like the dude who's wielding the axe.
You assume Scotty's going to be the dude.
And then Ash survives. In two, it's like, ooh, I'm scared, I lost my mind. But in the end, it's like, alright, here we go. And like fucking hooks the chainsaw in, like, like rip cords it and like goes down into the cellar. And it's like, alright, bitch.
Yeah.
You and me. And then, you know, and then you've got the third film where it's just like, he's fucking shooting a double-barrel shotgun over his shoulder and going, when he gets done killing a Deadeye, because he's such a fucking gangster at that point.
Because at that point, it's just, it's old hat. He can do it, he just doesn't want to. Yeah. He's like, I've done this for like 2 nights now. Like, I want to take a nap.
For this, like, what we know about his character so far, it doesn't make any sense for when he's all suited up for him to go, groovy. Like, that is just Bruce. Right?
It's just cool. That's all it is.
That's not the Ash that we've seen for the first couple of movies, but I think that's when he turns into that guy who's going to be the horror icon that everybody loves.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for me, I was like, wow, that really is out of place, watching it again.
I suppose it is, if you think about it, yeah.
But for what comes next, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And again, I think because in general, you think of these as sort of an arc and as almost kind of two in Army of Darkness. Almost being one extended movie. When you look at it through that lens, it all kind of makes sense because people kind of forget about the first movie and him being relatively ineffectual. So it's like, oh, that's kind of when he just goes, all right, fuck it, it's time to throw down. And then from then on, he's just kind of a badass. So it sort of works.
Two, we also get the first real quip out of him with the, I'll swallow your soul, and then
swallow this.
And then blows the head up.
That's the one with the elongated neck monster that screeches like a monkey, right? I love that monster.
Yeah, the Henrietta monster.
Yeah.
And then he gets...
Boy, Henrietta was so obviously Ted Raimi, though.
Yeah.
When she gets up in the Deadite suit, like, man, does that dude have a distinctive face.
Yeah.
And the way his body moves and everything, like, yeah, that is Mr. Raimi.
I love that in, like, three different scenes in Army of Darkness, he's three different people, like, yes, within the span of, like, 15 seconds.
Yeah, well, they're like,
I don't want to die! And it's like, oh, bend my... It's just like,
you're fooling nobody, Joxer.
Yeah.
The fuck out of here. You get crushed by a cabinet in Wishmaster.
What do you guys think of our new crop of cannon fodder in this movie? We've mentioned just barely that they even exist, but, like, the daughter... And her boyfriend that are kind of the country club kids.
Yeah, the Ascot twins can fuck right off.
They didn't really do anything for me. They never really have.
I feel bad.
Kind of like Barbara Joe and whatever the redneck dude is. They kind of.
I feel
me.
Bad for Barbara Joe because she clearly gets pulled off to be tree raped.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, sweet, another girl to rape. It's like, you have a problem, tree. You should not be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. No means no.
Means no.
We need to get down to the... I think we really need to get to the roots of your problem here.
Oh, wow. Wow.
If we could just branch out from our main topic of discussion here.
We just...
Yeah, you know what? Leave me alone.
We need to get Josh's little vaudeville hat and cane. Leave me alone.
Now, you can bring a drum and a cymbal with you. I'm fine with that.
So, yeah, we've got our kind of also-rans that exist so that they can be possessed, so that Bruce can have monsters to fight. That's fine, I suppose.
I like when he's getting pulled into the portal at the end of 2, and he's just, like, holding onto that board, and all he says is, how do you stop it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain practicality to everything Ash is concerned about.
I thought it was kind of excellent that the last word that she had to say was the one that she'd said, like, 8 times previous.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nope, I'm not opening that portal unless I hear one more conda. I gotta hear it.
Yep. The what do you think of the manifestation of the unseen force?
I really liked him.
I'm for it.
He's an obvious puppet, but he's huge.
It's a pretty impressive
puppet.
And I love
the giant tree arm.
The tree's like pounding on the cabin, I think, is pretty cool. I like that.
I also like when the evil comes in and you cut to Bruce, the flowers in the vase behind him wilt.
Oh, really? I don't think I've ever noticed that.
That is a nice little touch, yeah.
Because you're distracted by his hair turning white, usually.
Yeah, there's just a little vase of flowers, or like a pitcher of water with flowers in it, and as the evil comes in, they just turn black.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really neat looking.
I never noticed that.
Just prior to the unseen evil finally coming in, I felt a little fatigue for this one. There's like 10 minutes of it where I was checking the counter, like, okay... Yeah, there's another big suit. There's another, you know, crazy thing going. More business from the Ascot twins. And, yeah, I got burnt out, I guess. And I felt it started to drag, which is weird because it's short.
Yeah.
Right. But once they got the giant evil face in there spewing blue shit as he gets stabbed in the eye with a chainsaw, back on board.
Yeah, and I like the, Bruce getting sucked through the portal and you have, like, the whole... The perspective you expect, which is like portal in the background and Bruce kind of going, ah. But you get that one shot that cuts to just like a side view. So it looks like perfectly normal forest, but Bruce just kind of horizontally flying along. And it's like, yeah. I guess that's what that would look like if you were off to the side. It would just be a random dude getting sucked along. And like, it's an odd choice to show that. It's not the usual perspective you get in a thing like that. But again, that's kind of the weird
raininess. And a couple of seconds of 2001, which is a random light show for a couple of seconds.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Yeah, the other thing, too, I should point out is this has the, I believe it's this, yeah, it's this movie that has, there's a scene earlier on, but the camera is kind of in the ceiling, and so it's above a few boards, and so as it's tracking, every time a board passes through the camera, it has like this woof, woof, and it's just totally unnecessary, unrelated to anything that's happening. It's just that because something's passing the camera, he gave it a weird sound effect. And that's just one of those things about Raimi movies that I love.
Oh, Christ, like, the sound design in here is crazy. It's like there's so much Zack Snyder shit. Proportions of, like, sticking his arm into the chainsaw cuff, and it makes the sound of, like, something pulled out, a cork pulled out of a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just, again, later when he jumps and...
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It, like, locks in.
Yeah. And you're like, apparently he installed some kind of, like, key system in his arm to hold it on, but... Oh, so good. So do we want to wrap on this movie? Is there anything else you have to say about this one?
I think a rap is good.
I think I hit my points.
All right. This is by far my favorite, so I'm going to go like a 9 out of 10 mousetrap fingers for this one.
I would say that this one is better than the first one, but not my favorite of the three. Suspense about which one's my favorite. So I would say this one's probably about 7.75 out of 10 head vices.
Yes, the New Hampton head vices. I still think for the... Given that Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 are kind of trying to do the same thing, I like the way that Evil Dead did it better.
Mm-hmm.
I like the more stripped down, like, genuinely disturbing kind of deal. For the, like, crazy stop motion stuff, Army of Darkness is awesome for that. But this is, like, the weird in-between thing, so parts of it didn't hit. Parts of it are great. I still like Evil Dead better just because it's so dirty, gritty, in and out, and get it done. So I would give this like a 7 out of 10 singing mooses.
Yeah, nice.
I dare you to make out with that moose on the wall.
Somebody say Pop-Tarts? You have Pop-Tarts? Should we just jump right into Army of Darkness?
Sure.
Because the movie basically does exactly that. You have, again, a little bit of rewriting the history from the ending of
It has
Evil
the
Dead
best
2.
Opening.
It truly
of,
does.
Of all of them. Of all three of the movies. Just and this one has all of the best, like, little noises that Bruce Campbell makes.
Huh.
It was just like, I had a job. That's going to be in Housewares, aisle 3, shop smart, shop S smart. Like, and then just like, I watched the movie for those little things now where he's like, and those are like my favorite parts of the fucking movies now, is that shit happening.
That's awesome.
By the way, El Ejército de la Oscuridad.
I like Army of Darkness better.
It's good.
But
it's good.
Oscuridad.
Good job, Spanish.
Yeah, so the final bit of Evil Dead 2, we have Ash falls through the portal, ends up in ye olden times somewhere, and is instantly worshipped as some kind of hero. Whereas in Army of Darkness, they decide, you know what's more fun? Is if he falls through the thing and everybody hates him.
Likely, he's one of Henry's men. You know what I didn't...
I haven't even seen these assholes before.
By the way, I didn't notice in 2 the first couple of times I watched it, but there is that page out of the book that has his picture in it.
Yeah.
And for some reason, just skipped that both times.
Really?
Yeah, so seeing that, it's like, oh, they already had that set up. That's great. Like, he goes back in time
to
contain the evil, and when he says, obviously, that guy didn't do a very good job, like, yeah, he completely fails, and that's why the first 2 movies have happened.
Yeah, which I love awesome. That. It's like, it's a fun little bit of continuity that I thought was pretty cool. Who's the good guy king or whatever? Henry's the bad one. Well, not
Arthur.
Bad, but was it Arthur?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cliche.
Is it the Arthur?
I don't think so.
Is it B. Arthur?
It's B. Arthur.
Awesome. What a bit of armor this is! I'm, like, stabbing at his car. Because I love everything about, like, this movie, whereas me and Matt were talking off mic, it's the most quotable, but it's just the best of all the written lines and everything in this are just the best.
Yeah, no, because it has lines.
This is the one that,
none
has
of the shit they say in the first 2 is it all memorable.
This one goes too silly for me. I wanted
Mr. Fancy Pants.
I like all the, like, stop motion type stuff. Like, I like all those things individually, but for me, I wanted Ash's story to go somewhere else. And so this one is not my favorite. It was for a long time as a kid.
I'm going to go on. This whole dissection of the film is just going to be me saying things as the character. It's just quoting
Please
the whole
do.
Time.
Yes.
I love when he gets out of the pit and he's like, who wants some?
Yeah.
Do you want, like, and he's like pointing all these people and then eventually he's like,
huh?
You. And it's just like,
huh?
And he gives him the fucking Hulk Hogan ear horn and he just, like, snatches his whip away from him and shit, and then the dude is completely emasculated and just shoves a squire so he can show that he's still tough. And it's just like, yeah.
It's pretty badass.
By
the way, that monster in that pit is pretty fucking great.
Both of them.
That's right, there's both, yeah. But also the huge blood geyser when they throw the first guy in, which is just like, and Evil Dead has no problem with it. The human body clearly contains one water tower worth of blood at all times.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's just super compact.
Yeah, well, the thing about pressure, it's all pressurized in here.
Which is why you get a geyser when you stab someone.
It explodes out. It's all physics.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Just when he lets Henry go, too, and it's just like, Henry grabs that dude by the face, he's like, laughing in his face, and they take the horses and bail, And then Arthur's all pissed off, and he just blows his gun in half, and he's like, right. Just that whole opening sequence of him laying down the law, and then all the way through the, like, hey, you primitive screwheads, if any of you even touches me. And then you get another just ridiculous sound of going, ah-ha-ha-ha! And he turns around and shoots the thing, and it goes, like, backflipping into the pit. And
you get the infamous boomstick line.
Yep.
Like, all this is within the first 10 minutes, which does its job to set up the character that Ash is now, which is significantly different from what he's been in the previous two movies, which is the most competent warrior that's probably ever lived, and the most annoyed that he has to be a warrior guy that's ever lived. And that informs basically everything that happens for the rest of the movie. He can do it. He sure as shit doesn't want to. And that's just who he is from now on.
And kind of a dick with the ladies.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about his treatment of Sheila? Because she does fucking drill him in the head with a big-ass rock.
She really does.
And she fucks with his, like, fucking grabs his hair and, like, yanking him around. I love the first time that she's like, I thought you were one of Henry's men. First you want to kill me. Now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Yeah.
When he spits out a shitload of grapes. He's just not going to eat those ones. Just woof, the fuck out of
and
here.
And that's the thing is, I think only...
That was just what we call pillow talk, baby.
Only because they have so many fun, quotable lines, does he not come off as the hugest asshole ever, and you would stop rooting for him immediately. He's too charming in that first 10 minutes, where when he does that, you're like, you're a bit of a dumbass, but, like, you don't really mean this. Like, I think he's still a coward, I think, for real.
Matt, your primitive brain couldn't understand alloys or things with molecular structure.
Well, he is that, like, Han Solo guy.
Yeah.
Where you know that he's gonna show up and do what needs to get done, but he's gonna mouth off for a long time, and you're gonna think he's maybe gonna bail on you?
Yeah. Yeah, It's a fun anti-hero, and again, because they give him every 3 minutes something ridiculously funny to say or do, you stay engaged.
Good, bad, and the one with the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're
What's
good,
the alternate
Ash.
Take on that? There's an alternate line there.
Well, the actual line in the movie is good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun.
No, I mean, there's a thoroughly just different line.
Really?
Yeah, there's good, bad, and then it just falls flat. I'm the one with the gun is the good line that was in the original theatrical one. If you have, like, the alternate versions, which, of course, I have, like, six. There's another line that if you get, like, the director's cut is, like, not a joke. And I was, why would you ever put a not funny part there when you have this funny part that you clearly shot? I can't think of what it is now offhand. Damn it. Anyway, but the whole point is it was just, there's, watching the movie initially on, like, your average VHS release, you know, fucking great, funny as shit. And then I was like, oh, director's cut, even more funny shit. And most of what happened in the director's cut was jokes were changed or taken out, which was weird. So maybe they wanted a little bit more of a fantasy serious thing. But yeah, I don't know. It was interesting.
But your setup is so not conducive to being serious.
Agreed, which I think is why, like, they got pushed to do what they did, which I think was made the best movie they could have.
I mean, you just sent your dude into the medieval times with a chainsaw hand.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, like, the anachronism is the funny part. It's gonna be silly.
Yeah, so the,
you've got the words that he has to say are Klaatu Barada Nikto. Like,
yeah.
Clearly, you're not going for some deep, like, he doesn't speak the deep Elvish or some shit.
No, not at all.
The line...
Thanks to the internet.
Oh, you found it already?
I found the line. It's good, bad, I'm not that good.
Not a joke.
Yeah.
Not a joke.
That's
not
that good.
Yeah, it's good, bad, pause, I'm not that good.
Yeah. And it is given with almost that exact delivery. It just falls just like, yep, I'm just reading this thing. And it's like, why would you swap that out?
Isn't nearly as badass as I'm the guy with the gun.
Yeah, that's fucking killer. And it fits the character they've developed the whole
movie. And in that sequence, we have my single favorite moment of Bruce Campbell of all time.
Okay. All time?
And he throws the fucking dismembered body in the grave, and the head falls out, and the head's talking shit about how he's not going to get the fucking Necronomicon. And Bruce Campbell, not even paying attention to what he says, just goes, hey, sit on your face. And the eyes look around, and then... Oof, shovel full of dirt, just boof right in the face.
Which means you know Sam Raimi threw that shovel of dirt.
It's just so perfect, just like, poof, and it's just like enough to cover the mouth entirely, then all that's left is muffled sound, and it's just like, yeah, I think we know who won that verbal exchange, didn't we? The guy who still has arms won.
What do you guys think of the all the little mini Bruce Campbells fight in the windmill?
And then it kind of drags.
That got a little long and silly to me. I mean,
My Fair Lady.
Yeah, but like, I'll forgive the compositing where like they're all very clearly on different planes of existence. Like, no, these people are not in the same room, especially when they're like pushing his nose shut to try to get him to like open his mouth. You're like, I mean, good on you. You spent a lot of time making sure that lined up properly, but
I like the giant fucking skewering fork or whatever it is that they use in medieval times. That the fork is like
the three inches
wide,
yeah.
And just like he fucking just lawn darts it, and we get this like fucking zoom, boom.
And that one is another scene that they shot in reverse.
Yep.
Which from the book I read was where after like the fifth take of him having to like start impaled, come up, run away, whatever it was, and then like the fifth take, he's like, Bruce is like, yeah, I got one of the greatest notes from a director of all time of, Bruce, that is the worst backwards acting I've ever seen in my life. He's like, really, asshole? yeah, but it's that kind of zaniness. It can wear a little thin, and that's why I think I like Evil Dead 2 a little better, because this one gets really over-the-top silly in a few spots. But they're willing to go there, and that's pretty fun, you know?
How do you feel about the skeleton when he goes, out of here.
Yeah.
So, like, that part, I've seen it a million times, and every time I laugh.
I love just, that you have
Gotta get out of here.
Your A squad resurrected, your B squad resurrected, and your C squad, which is just a plastic skeleton tied to a horse. Because yeah. When it rides away, the guy's just like, bah, 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 it just goes bouncing around everywhere.
Not me of the dead amassing. Not more than 2 days' ride. And it's just like, I don't get how scouts worked in the fantasy realm, because it's just like, any movie I see was like, the scout's back. Well, like, 2 days ago, I saw a couple of fucking...
I thought we were 2 days away.
Yeah.
So either like, they're just like, over that ridge, yeah, or like, they're 4 days away now.
Yeah, they're no more than 2 days' ride. Well, were they trying to come forward the whole time?
I don't know, man. They're fucking whole army of the dead. I got out of there as soon as I saw those fucking guys. Get off my back. Were they pointing, like, exactly the same way back that you're taking? Or are they going to take, like, the freeway, or are they going to go down by the river where it's more scenic, but you have to go slower?
The
army of the dead.
Speaking of the skeletons, too, you have the initial fucking up taking the book in the graveyard, where you have the three books, and you have the so over the top Bruce Campbell talking to himself to make sure we understand why this is a problem. Whoa, three books? Nobody ever said anything about three books. Do I take one book or all books or what? And it's like, thank you for elucidating your problem, sir. Like, I do like the getting sucked into the vortex book.
Yeah.
And the insane, like, face stretching, which you assume is just going to be like the, whoa, like, look at the power of that thing, until it's over and he's still elongated, like, from Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Does he actually do it?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, there is, like, there three is times. One of those moments. Yeah. He starts with, like, his jaw down to, like, his stomach. And does like a couple of like, and then like eventually is like the big chin, and there's a couple weird poses, and he gets it back to normal. And it's like, whoa.
And given that chin, book. You're not sure when he's done.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, is this?
That looks
I mean,
legit.
Is it normal for him?
I like the bitey book because it flies away and then like lands. He's like,
it's like having a bat in his hair, and he's just like screaming.
And he's just like, flailing. Then this is our badass with a fucking robotic knight hand,
right.
Which gives us our second groovy of the series.
Yeah, which also it's. I remember the first time I watched this with a group of people who hadn't seen it before, and they just go, that part is so unrealistic. They couldn't have a crazy knight hand. I was like, I know, that's kind of the purpose.
Yeah, that's part of the joke. Also, Army of the Dead.
And they're like, oh yeah, that is pretty funny. I'm like, you fucking laugh right
now. I was instantly disappointed by the robotic hand because the chainsaw is so fucking cool. Like, I get it, it makes sense, it's easier to shoot a film with a hand with a glove on it, but I was like, oh, but the chainsaw.
I love the part of him when he gets the robotic hand, and Blacksmith and Sheila are there, and it's just...
And just RoboCops just that
crush chalice. Yeah. That goblet, and, like, the wine goes everywhere. I was like, man, robot hand is fucking tight.
Thanks, asshole, that was the Holy Grail. Yeah. We spent, like, 50 years looking for that.
And if only, like, even once the robot hand had been useful beyond the measure of a normal hand, that would have been a little cooler, but that is the one time it does anything super strength, which is a bit of a drag. I still just think a chainsaw on a dude's arm is cooler.
Well, also, when he grabs the really small rope to, like, pull himself up when he chops it off, That'd be a lot harder to do, holding on to with a real human hand.
But like, if Errol Flynn could do it, so could Bruce Campbell. So once he does finally grab the book and says the words wrong, you get, again, that Three Stooges influence as all the skeleton arms popping out of the ground and just basically waving, like, fucking wacky waving inflatable balloon arm guys. But you get the whole, like, you know, boonk, and then, like, the Three Stooges block, and then the two come from the sides, and, like, him laughing when he succeeds, and then, like, kind of crying. And then you have that moment of, like, oh, God, no, and then, like, nine hands. And you get the little Tweety Bird sound effect after that, where you're like, okay, like, again, ridiculous. And part of why I don't like this one as much as two, but on its own sake, it's pretty great.
I love that the end game was, well, the bad guy, we're just going to double up. We're going to double down. It's Bruce versus Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is lovely.
It is. I like that character. He's not as weird of a villain as you could have, I guess, because you end up just kind of like a dude fighting a dude. And the one dude looks kind of gross, but, you know, the other one's the monster guy. But the... I don't know. It makes sense to, like, have... Oh, by the way, when he gets reconstituted by the lightning thing and there's a little bit of Michael Jackson, like, woo! As he gets... What the fuck? That makes not a goddamn bit of sense.
I mean, when he first gets reconstituted like that, he looks like he has a fucking Jerry Curl wig on. His hair... Like, if you look at his, like... Go back and just watch that part with the woo, and there's, like, his hair is glistening, and the, like... That's gotta be just, like, Raimi and them being like, he looks like fucking a weird Michael Jackson right
let's
now.
Just add this little
like, book. Let's throw, like, a little bit of Thriller on there.
Yeah.
And let's just do that. And I love it. It's like, I live again. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, well, that is kind of a continuing theme in this movie. Yeah. People just like, I'm gonna say something cool right now. Just for me. Some of these are just for us.
Sheila gets abducted by a shittier version of the creature from the Tales from the Dark Side movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty shitty. Yeah. I mean, that is like Halloween store mask with zero articulation, just kind of.
It's a winged version of a fan made costume, not a cosplay, but a fan made costume.
Yeah.
Of the creature from Big Trouble Little China.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, I get that.
And so Sheila gets taken away and turned into Bad Sheila.
I like Bad Sheila.
And she may be bad,
but she feels.
But she feels. Good. it's like almost a question, just like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, I love delivered directly to the camera.
And the skeletons. Oh, she's a sight for sore bones.
There is that moment too, where you have all the skeletons working, and then there's the two topless chicks just kind of
walking. Oh, we got plans for you, girly girl. I was like, where are they taking those?
You have no dicks. What plans do you have?
They got plans.
Apparently they do.
So
they got fingers.
And then
he's gonna go finger blast some slaves.
Can finger blast some slaves be the episode title? Or?
No, iTunes won't allow that.
Damn it, iTunes! Anyway, so, you take everything good and take it from us.
Keeping in lockstep with the idea of scouts, the Skull Scout comes. He's like, "There's barricade." Like he knows the entire inner workings of the fortress, yeah. Even though he's only probably ridden around it.
Yeah, or maybe even only seen it from the ridge that they happen to be standing.
Maybe
yeah.
Before he was a skeleton, he worked in the castle.
He could have worked in that same castle. That's true.
He might
have been like the initial like head guard or something.
How awesome
there,
is
my lord, the northern parapet. That would be the most likely place.
How awesome is it when the wizard gets handed the bag of gunpowder and he like looks at it and he tries to put it over the fire and he's like, no, no. And then when he like goes and turns away to do something else, Ash grabs all the fire and slides even closer to himself. Let's just keep that out of reach of old Explodey over there.
I'm going to say that the Deathmobile they make out of the classic is one of the best things in this movie.
Yes, quite.
Because basically just adding helicopter blades to the front of a car and mowing down skeletons and legit just destroying things.
And woo-woo! Like steam power
and just like watching like and of course they can't articulate the skeletons so they're just clearly there, it's in slow-mo and they drive up until they hit him and they just explode and they add a sound effect of but it's still great and, like,
and that's where we've got to get the hell out of here. That dude's like, dude, I ain't getting fucking mowed down by this fucking thing.
Yeah, that thing is pretty fucking great. Unfortunately Sheila shows up
and ruins
his sweet ride. We haven't mentioned the classic. The classic is the car that they use throughout all three films that is actually Sam Raimi's car.
And shows up in every one of his movies.
It shows up in every movie he's done, and they in many movies end up destroying it, so they have to get a second one. And on multiple occasions, Bruce has tried to make sure it's actually the original in the shot to destroy Sam's car because he fucking hates that he calls it the classic. But to my knowledge, he's never succeeded in actually destroying the original. So another little bit of trivia that I always thought was cool. So yeah, the classic gets wrecked. Does that lead us to our full-on like sword fight?
Well, first we get the incredible, you found me beautiful once, baby, you sure got ugly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And fucking flips her over the balcony and kills her, and then we get the fight after Arthur gets hit with like four arrows.
Anthony,
yeah, that dude's rocking the badass train because protect the book and just like thump thump thump. He looks like John fucking Snow by the end of it.
How much do you guys love the Mighty Ducks moment in this movie though? When he's like, "Go and cry to mom, I'm done running," and then the blacksmith just goes,
"I'll stand by you."
Yeah. And it's like, all it takes is one, and all the sheeple will follow. Yeah.
I do love that he trains everybody, and so when the army of skeletons finally shows up, they're like, ha, hoo, ha, and that takes out one row of bad guys.
Well, they do it twice, because they don't get far enough.
Yeah. But they take out one row of bad guys, and then it's just batshit melee. It's like, well, okay, all your training was good for 8 seconds. Awesome. I'm pretty sure if you hand a guy a big stick, he knows how to swing it at someone else's head.
Well, we've all seen the Daffy Duck with the quarterstaff. You know, oh, hey, thrust, parry, spin.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
There's not a point, like, so here's the admirable restraint that Sam Raimi has in this movie, is that there's not a point where one of them is spinning the stick, and the skeleton comes up and sticks an arm in it, and then the guy starts spinning around on the other side. Because most of this is very cartoony.
It is very, very cartoony.
That is the line that he will not cross.
Yeah. So you have, how is it that they burn all the skin off of the evil Bruce Campbell? I can't remember.
How'd it get burned? Sorry. He grabs a torch and shoves it in his face.
Is that all it is? And he just knocks him off the parapet.
He knocks him off the parapet, and then he comes back up, and he's just like, "I crush your pitiful army." Ah, he has the book, and then he fucking...
And he's just the skeleton, but with human eyes, which is the cover of Evil Dead 2, and is super creepy.
A Which skull is why that still I didn't watch Evil Dead 2 for a super, long super time. Yeah.
It's a great shot. Like, I love that.
And then he fucking cuts the rope and sends fucking evil ash up into the sky, and he gets fireworked.
Yep, he basically just gets 4th of July.
Fucking 4th of July, motherfucker!
So
that's a different movie.
You know, Bruce can't stay, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, they defeated the evil, Bruce can't stay, so the wizards cook up his sleeping tonic that'll allow him to sleep for a century for each drop he takes.
Right.
And this is where, again, we mentioned earlier that the movie diverges. There's the better ending, which is the one where he wakes up. You cut to him in the present, working at S-Mart again. Or there's the director's cut, lamer version, where he sleeps a century too long, and the whole world is destroyed. And he just kind of wakes up to, like, kind of London in flames, because I think Big Ben is in the background there.
If there were an Army of Darkness 2 that came out in, like, 94, 95, that's the better ending.
Well, it's the one that's perhaps, like, more necessary for an interesting sequel.
Because that would be that would have been super great. Like, the one that they're planning on doing in 2016, like, Bruce Campbell's kind of old.
Yeah.
And we could end up in an Indiana Jones-style situation here. I mean, he's not 75 Harrison Ford was, but I mean, I've seen the dude recently.
No, but I mean, he's not.
Yeah, my name is Bruce. He wasn't looking great.
Well, no, I mean, my name is Bruce. He wasn't looking great, but then ever since he's been on Burn Notice, though, he's been in decent shape.
Like, having steady work is going
to. You know, he's on a show where he's supposed to be an ex Navy SEAL operative.
Oh, well,
where he's like kind of like a disgraced Navy SEAL who's living in hiding, and he like does all these hitman contracts. Like, he's a little doughy, but at the same time, he's like still pretty.
Because he's got to be.
He could go
50s, 60s.
You know, I can't believe we didn't cover Yoshi bitch. Like, that is a line perplexed me the first time. I was like, well, all bitches are she. But I call my dude friends bitches, so I guess she bitch. Wait a minute, hold on.
Sometimes you just need an extra syllable in.
And it's just like, yo, she bitch. And then I love that it's like sped up. And it's like for a one-handed dude to fucking reload a double-barrel shotgun in like 4 seconds?
Yeah.
Fucking A.
Like, well done. Yeah, just
that's kind of
open over
pretty hot on fire. Get the trick. Get an axe.
That was my, back when like computers were dumb in like the mid-90s, that was the sound effect I played when I turned off my computer. I thought that was super clever. The So yeah, you have the director's cut ending, which is like post-apocalyptic. No, I slept too long. Or you have him back at S-Mart talking to a bored Ted Raimi, telling about how he saved the world and didn't stay for the girl. And Ted Raimi is obviously not buying it until some chick in the next aisle over like knocks something over, spills a drink or something.
Well, because the hot stock girl walks by. She's like, "That's a cute story." Yep. And then it goes
and
down.
And then you have a deadite. He breaks the glass, fights the thing off, whatever. Has like the shotgun that shoots sparks for some reason.
Yeah. Like, and then we get the like straight up hero ending. He fucking yanks her in.
Yeah,
and
pulls her in for like the hero
and
pose.
And then hail the king, baby. And yeah. Kisses her. And then we have the end of the movie.
Which is the far more satisfying end, considering that was basically the end of the trilogy.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I feel like you could still continue on from there as well, because that shows there's still clearly evil to be fought. He did not say the words right. You know, it doesn't mean he couldn't have gotten back to his correct time, but that would mean that the evil is still not defeated. So, yeah, you could pick up from there. And there's, you know, technically, yeah. The first two movies don't take place in a period. They just take place in the present.
Right.
So you could have another movie just take place in the present. There's the one wacky one that goes back in time or whatever. Like, whatever. I don't know. There's a lot of talk about how these movies might get sequels and intersect at some point between the remake and these and whatever.
Yeah, I like the idea of them potentially being Ash's children. I thought that's pretty awesome.
I don't know. I mean,
the progeny.
They got a ticket from me. I'll go see it, whatever it might be. And
so Bruce Campbell's 55 now.
Okay, so that's not too bad.
So he's still, like...
He's got...
He could be in... I mean, to be fair, he's probably... relatively wealthy, not like rich, but like he's probably living a life of leisure.
Yeah.
But
remember, you know, the guy that's in the Mission Impossible movies is in his mid-50s too. Like, it's not impossible to be doing.
Right,
this
no, I'm saying there are plenty of like fucking look at Schwarzenegger. He's going to do another Conan.
Yeah.
And he's like what, 63?
Yeah, that has been the thing that I've been amused by is that the like Tom Cruise is currently the age Wilford Brimley was when Wilford Brimley made Cocoon. And,
yeah, maybe there is something to this Xenu shit after all.
You know, same thing with Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is also the age Wilford Brimley was when Wilford Brimley made Cocoon. And it's like, okay, so 20 years ago, that put you as a character in a nursing home.
Right.
Now that makes you action star.
So. But Wilford Brimley was also...
He was born looking for
He was in The Thing when he's like 30. He looks 50.
Yeah. And he's still
diabetes.
He looks old.
Diabetes. Oatmeal and diabetes.
Come at you like a whirling dervish.
What do we want to do for ratings on this one?
I'll go first. I'll go first.
Apparently.
Well, I get to go first once in the round. Like, you started that the first one. He got the second one. Then I thought, logically, I get the third one.
I wasn't keeping score.
I do, because I like patterns and order.
And winning.
And winning. I like a lot, too.
All right, Rain Man, go ahead.
9.
We gotta finish before Wapner comes on. Come on.
Just 9.
Mm. Oh, I thought you were just freaking out over there.
Nope, just 9 out of 10.
Alright.
So the German word for no.
I'm like a 6 out of 10 for this one. I think I like the original in part 2 definitely better. This one, I think I got oversaturated. I love the lines from it. Obviously, like, you can laugh your ass off talking about it, but I think as a movie, I'd rather watch either of the other two more, given my choice.
I really like it. It's not a horror movie. It's its own little genre of, like, fantasy comedy kind of thing.
Yep.
And I do wish he would tone it down a bit at times with just the silliness quotient. The only comparison I can think of does not paint me in a very flattering light, but it reminds me of the beginning of Moulin Rouge, where it's like, Jesus Christ, just slow down for a minute, because the camera's jumping all over the place, there's goofy sound effects going on, people are pulling wide mugging faces, and just like, just give me a second and take it a little slow. So like, there is an element of fatigue in here, and there's also the, like, you had a budget, so you went crazy on the set pieces and you ended up with like one more than you had the budget for. Mm-hmm. So there are things that look a little goofy, but at the same time it's super fun. And for what it is, which is like a genre of it by itself, I would still hit it at like a 7.75 out of 10. Yoshi bitch, let's go.
Cool. Let's take a break, and we will come back with next week's assignments.
Shark Week. Hey, you know what Jaws' favorite doctor from Doctor Who is? Tennant. Tennant. Actually, it's Eccleston, but Tennant fits better.
Eccleston.
Just like
Matt Smith.
Tennant. The end of it.
Matt Smith.
You're not even trying anymore, Jaws.
I'll just leave, and just swims away.
It turns into Jabberjaw, works in cartoons for free.
So once again, Dunn got really excited about some movies, so we're going to watch them. Because he's physically bigger than the two of us.
Also, it brings such childlike glee to the table.
All I'm saying is that the entire internet was in a fucking uproar over Sharknado. And I don't have cable, and I want to watch Sharknado. And maybe I had a podcast where we talked about horror movies, and guess what? Fucking monster movies fall right into it, especially ones where hurricanes turn into super tornadoes and suck up all the sharks and throw them into Los Angeles.
See, I misunderstood. I thought it was Sharknado, and the whole thing is like sharks with nuclear weapons.
Sharks in super tense situation rooms.
Yeah, they're like negotiating.
Pin on the button.
Yeah, just...
And you can't tell if he's, like, blinking or not, because he's got just that black dead eye, and you're like, I don't know. Is he gonna
he was
cry?
Smiling.
He's always smiling.
He's always smiling.
So, these are going to be all shark movies.
It's Shark Week here on Horror Show Hot Dog.
I mean, it's Fish Fortnite.
Oh, right, because you're thinking Discovery Channel suing us. I'm thinking period jokes. So, we're attacking this from two different angles.
Right.
Women say it's
we
Shark
We call it
Week.
Shark Week, yeah.
We do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't, maybe. Most of my friends do.
Huh. I stopped at, like, surfing the Crimson Wave from Clueless whenever I have my period. What?
So the movies we're going to watch... The movies we're going to watch...
There are no periods here because all of our pauses are incredibly pregnant.
All right, so...
Jaws. Is one of them.
Yeah.
Are we seriously going to have to watch Sharktopus?
Oh, Sharktopus. Yeah, right.
Oh, wait. You watched 11 movies. I'll watch fucking Sharktopus.
All right. That's cool.
So
we
got
like
Jaws.
Six more passes.
We got Jaws. We got Sharktopus. And Sharknado.
Oh,
honorable mention to Shark Night, which is streaming on Netflix. So if you want to watch Shark Night, I'll probably watch it and I'll make some references to it.
I'm probably going to at least watch the clip on YouTube of Samuel L. Jackson getting eaten in Deep Blue
Sea. Then we'll probably talk about that too. This is all things shark related. We're going
to
go all
out. I'm hoping that there is a sequel to Shark Night called Shark Night Rises.
Oh my God.
So awesome.
Because I'm trying to like...
I was born!
You think the lake is your ally? You merely swim in the lake. I was born in it.
He's a shark. He can't be born in the lake. Shut the fuck up. Let him talk.
It's a talking shark.
And he's got that sick-ass Bane mask on. Just shut the fuck up and let him go.
But wait, that's the one thing that makes the shark terrifying is his giant teeth, and he's got the mask on.
We didn't think this movie through.
But we sure as fuck did make $75 million opening weekend on a $3 million budget. Sequel town, baby!
Now, don't be confused, because there is Shark versus Octopus, which is not Sharktopus.
Oh.
There is a movie called Shark versus Octopus. What we want is the movie in which the shark and the octopus are combined into
and
a thing
created
with tentacles
by,
and a huge mouth.
Genetically created by a scientist, which that's, you know, I guess, believable in a flimsy premise, until you find out that that scientist is Eric Roberts.
Yeah.
We're living in a world where Eric Roberts
can do whatever the fuck he wants, honestly. I think in real life, if he wanted to make, he's like, I made a sharktopus. Like, sure, of course you did. Yeah, you were in the Mr. Brightside video.
It's a really good one. He, like, put the crayon drawing on the fridge. Just like,
Sharktopus. All I know is that we have to at least watch the one scene in Shark Night where the dude is, like, trying to go for help on the jet ski. Because it's a giant lake, apparently. It's, like, one of the great lakes in the middle of, like, Utah.
Oh, that one.
Oh, the one from Piranha 3D.
Yes, that lake. And they're, like, fucking flying across the lake, and he's like, all right, I'm going to get us to safety. We'll just go ahead. And he's, like, talking to the other guy in the other jet ski, and he turns around, and all you see is shark has leapt out of water and just consumes the whole thing. He's like, whoop, and just, like, lands right back in there.
Awesome.
And it's just like, I approve of all of this.
This is delightful.
I have a feeling that this is going to be kind of like watching... Psycho and then Psycho 4 yeah. and Halloween 2 in the same week, where like Jaws is a classic, right?
And it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And those other two are Sci-Fi Channel original movies. At least they're going to have plenty of people from the 90s in them.
That's the thing is like, we're going to watch Jaws, which Jon's right. It's the psycho of fish films.
It's The Shining in the ocean.
Yeah, it's The Shining. It's The Shining of the sea.
It's got that on the can and everything.
Sorry, Jack.
And guess what? That's next week's episode title.
Called it.
Yeah.
Got it in one.
I'm going to go ahead and just drop the mic now and say that nothing will be better.
No, I think you're right.
I'm glad that we don't have a title this week still, but...
I think the best I've written down so far was Bruce Campbell invented duck face. I think that might be
the winner.
Nothing else.
Then like Shark Night would be the equivalent of like the Gus Van Sant psycho mixed with Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Like the Killer Clowns come to rent a room at the Bates Motel, and Vince Vaughn beats off watching them shower. That's what Sharknado or Sharktopus is.
The scene where the camera goes straight up the shark's asshole is really weird. Like, do they even have
I actually re-listened to that show again, and I forgot all about the Anne Heche straight asshole, like, right. way into her asshole shot. And it's like, fuck.
Now, Sharknado is bringing us Tara Reid and 90210's Ian Ziering.
Oh, I was hoping for, like, a Freddie Prinze Jr. in one of these, but...
He's
there
right,
was one, I think
he's
it was, like,
WWF
Mega
stuff
Shark...
Now.
Is he really?
Mega something shark had
Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus
had Belinda Carlisle in it.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And heaven was a place on earth for that movie. So, unlike some shows where we pick three movies at random and we don't know if they're going to be any good, and none of them are good, two of these are probably going to just be tee up and
yeah,
and hit a home run.
I think we'll probably have a reason
Jaws
to have a lightning round next week
yeah.
again. We didn't need one this week, but we may have need for a lightning round.
And we couldn't
week.
Really have a lightning round last week.
Oh, God. The whole show was round. Attempting to be a lightning round.
And it's still clocked in way over.
Yeah.
It would have been great to have you guys do a lightning round for the entire series, like 90 seconds, 11 movies.
I bet you can do that.
Jason kills people. Drop the mic. So what you should probably do, while you're at it, you could probably go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/horrordog.
Woo.
You could go to horrorshowhotdog.com, or you can hang out with cool kids at on the Twitter at HSHDpodcast.
Yeah.
That is still so fucking hard to say. It's the judicial system of our...
It is.
And continue adding... Meteor friends list on Steam, because that's been a lot of fun. I've just been filling up the list.
Nice.
So that's fun chatting with you guys on there as well.
I haven't looked at the Steam summer sale yet this morning. So
I didn't look at it today. Yesterday's all I bought was Scribble Knots Unlimited because it was $5. And I know Josh is just going to be like, fuck that game.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, I didn't like it much.
So right. I give no fucks.
There are zero fucks given.
If you type zero fucks given into Scribble Knots, it actually
generates Adam Hollywood Dunn.
It does. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Shark Week.
Bye.